feet and daylight unto my path. And a light unto, a light unto my path, my path.
Welcome to Searchlight, a survey through Scripture with Pastor John Corson. It is our desire to bring you a systematic study of the entire Bible, chapter by chapter, book by book. Over the past few Searchlight programs, we have been looking at the story of Gideon. This is a wonderful story with many lessons. Today, we look at Gideon's story with a verse-by-verse study of Judges chapter 7 and 8. In this study, we will see how God can overcome what seems to be insurmountable odds. If you are in a battle, or a difficult situation, or in a dilemma that seems to be impossible, then you will want to listen to this story. Let's now join Pastor John for the beginning of this study and see the power and wisdom of God in impossible situations.
Judges chapter 7. God loves to work in the impossible situations. And so he puts you and me in places of impossibility, so that we can see that it's the Lord who comes through and works things out ultimately. And to him alone will be all the glory. Such is the case in our story before us with Gideon. Gideon, a man who was hiding away in a wine press for fear of the Midianites in his day, when the Lord approached him and said, "You're a mighty man of valor." "Who, me?" Gideon said. He was amazed by that salutation and greeting. "Me? A mighty man of valor? You gotta be kidding." "No, Gideon, I'm gonna use you mightily. I'm gonna have you, Lord, be the, Gideon, be the instrument to overcome the men of Midian." The Midianites, these brutal men who would storm through an area on camels, the first soldiers in history, the first army in history to use camels in warfare. And the Midianites were numbering 135,000 in their massive army. And they were intimidating and terrorizing the people of Israel. Now God is raising up Gideon, an unlikely person who said, "Me? I'm from the least family in our tribe, and I'm the least guy in our family. Me?" Yes, Gideon. Because the Lord, as we saw previously, loves to use the foolish things of the world to confound the wise, that he might receive all the glory. Or as Paul declared, that no man will glory in his presence. All the glory will go to God exclusively. So the story continues in chapter 7. Gideon has been called to be the man to lead this war against the people of Midian. Then Jerubbaal, who is Gideon? Remember, Jerubbaal is the name given to him because the name Jerubbaal means contender or challenger of Baal. After he was called in chapter 6 to be this deliverer, God said, "Now you go to that place in your father's house where Baal's altar has been erected, where Baal is being worshipped, and you pull that altar down, and you cut down the trees that are growing around the grove." And Gideon, he did just that. He pulled down that altar of Baal, and they cut down those trees where there was shady activities of immorality taking place. And the next day, the men of that town were going to kill Gideon. How dare he pull down the sacred altar of Baal? But Gideon's dad said, "Wait a minute. If Baal is so powerful, let Baal defend himself. I mean, hey, don't come down on my son Gideon because he pulled down Baal's altar. If Baal is a real god," Gideon's dad said that day, then Baal can defend himself. From that time on, Gideon was known as Jerubbaal, which means challenger or contender of Baal. So this Jerubbaal, who is Gideon, and all the people that were with him rose up early and pitched beside the well of Herod, so that the host of the Midianites were on the north side of them by the hill of Moreh in the valley. Gideon had sounded the trumpet to call the men of Israel to gather around him to engage the Midianites in this battle. And now they're there at the well or spring of Herod. We go there when we go to Israel. It's a spring that bubbles up out of the ground. The word Herod literally means trembling. And indeed, these guys that were there with Gideon must have felt a little bit of fear and trepidation. There must have been some trembling among them because they knew that they were vastly outnumbered. I mean, there was 32,000 Israelites against 135,000 Midianites, 14 to 1. That means each one of them would have to kill four, you see, if they're going to be victorious over the men of Midian. The odds weren't good, 4 to 1, you see, with these 32,000 that gathered there at the well or spring of Herod. Now, today, when you go to the spring of Herod, we get to go to this little stream that trickles from that spring. But they've also now recently built a great big swimming pool there. And it's kind of nice. So we'll take a dip and dive in and swim around there in this great big lovely pool. I'm sure that Gideon's guys wished it was there in their day too. But it wasn't. It was just simply the spring and the creek that flowed from it. And the Lord said to Gideon, with these 32,000 men that had gathered around him, "The people that are with thee are too many for me to give the Midianites into their hands, lest Israel vaunt themselves against me, saying, 'My own hand hath saved me.'" Hey, too many men, Gideon. If the 32,000 are victorious over the 135,000 brutal, butcherous Midianites, hey, they're going to take the credit. Too many, 32,000. Gideon must have thought, "You're kidding. We're outnumbered 4 to 1. But God said, "I know the tendency within people, and that's to take the credit for what I do. They'll take the glory, and that ought not to be. There's too many men there. So go," verse 3, "and proclaim in the ears of the people, 'Whoever is fearful and afraid amongst you, let him return and depart early from Mount Gilead.'" You guys can leave. You're dismissed if you have fear in your hearts or if you're feeling anxiety. Go ahead and go. Well, they're returned from that group of 32,000. They're left that day 22,000. That's amazing. So 22,000 guys said, "Okay, we're out of here." And they packed up their stuff and they left. So now 10,000 remain. So the odds were 4 to 1. In favor of the Midianites. Now it's 14 to 1. I mean, the odds don't look good. This is really an incredible scene. 10,000 men. And the Lord said to Gideon, verse 4 again, "The people are still too many. So bring them down to the water, and I will test them there. And it shall be that of whom I say to thee, 'This shall go with thee,' the same shall go with thee. And to whomsoever I say to thee, 'This shall not go with thee,' well, those guys shall not go with thee." So, verse 5, "He brought down the people, the 10,000 that remained, to the water. And the Lord said to Gideon, 'Everyone that lappeth of the water with his tongue, as a dog lappeth, him shalt thou set by himself," or set aside. "Likewise, everyone that bows down upon his knees to drink." And verse 6, "The number of them that lapped, putting their hand to their mouth, lapping the water from their hand like a dog would do, there were 300 of those guys. But the rest, the 9,700, exactly, thank you, they bowed down on their knees and got right down into the water, you see. Well, the Lord, verse 7, said to Gideon, "By the 300 men that lapped, will I save you and deliver the Midianites into your hand. Let all the rest, the 9,700, go back home again." So the people took their victuals, their supplies in their hand, and their trumpets, and he sent all the rest of Israel, every man, to his tent. And he retained those 300 men. And the host of Midian was beneath him in the valley below. 300 men. Now, as we talked about previously, now the odds are crazy. It was 4-1 when there was 32,000. 14-1 when it was 10,000. And now it's 450-1. There's only 300 men that are going to comprise or make up Gideon's army. 450-1. I mean, the odds of that would be like if the McLaughlin junior high girls powder puff football team took on the Green Bay Packers in the Super Bowl. I mean, you would say, I'm not going to bet on the McLaughlin junior high girls powder puff football team to beat the Green Bay Packers in a serious game. That's impossible. That's crazy. So too was this. The men of Midian had camels, and they were warriors. They were experienced. They were powerful. And the men of Gideon, I mean, we're talking 300 in number. Now, why were these 300 chosen? A couple of ideas. It could be because these guys that were on their knees and took their hand and made it into a cup and brought the water up to their face and lapped it up with their tongue like this. It could be that this shows us something. It shows us, first of all, the men that God uses are men, first of all, of priority. That is, they are not taking unnecessary time to do necessary tasks. God uses people that don't take unnecessary time to do necessary. There are tasks that we have to do. We have to mow our lawns. We have to pay the bills. We have to clean our homes. And that's true. But I'll tell you something. There are people that become obsessed with necessary tasks. And they spend all of their time, they spend way too much time, they spend unnecessary amounts of time doing necessary tasks. Now here Gideon said, men, go along the creek bed here and drink. And there were those that just got really into it and put their faces in the water. They bowed down. Others would just sip from. And it could be that this is indicative of God declaring, the men I use are men that don't get all involved in necessary tasks. Yeah, it's important. Take a drink, but don't submerge yourself in it, or don't be totally obsessed by it. And I'll tell you, it's true that men and women like me and you will be limited in what we can do for the kingdom, or how we can be used by God if we submerge ourselves in the necessary tasks of the day or the necessary duties in life. See, I think there's a truth there in that. These guys didn't take unnecessary time doing a necessary task. It also shows not only this priority, but it shows, number two, humility. You see, they lapped the water like a dog. Now, in Israeli culture, in Jewish thought, to be a dog was, oh my goodness, the ultimate picture or illustration of humiliation. They called Gentiles dogs. To be likened to a dog, to be called a dog, was, oh my goodness, one of the most insulting things you could say about a person. So these guys, we are told, they lapped water as a dog laps water. They had the appearance of a dog lapping water from a bowl, if you would. And it could be that in that we see a second characteristic or key of men that God uses or women that God uses. They don't spend unnecessary time on necessary tasks, and there's a degree of humility there. They're willing to be thought of as being dog-like, if you would, or what have you. Because the idea was why would they be doing that? Perhaps because they were in a position of alertness. By not putting their face in the water, by lapping up the water like a dog, they could look about and they could see if there should be or would be an attack from the enemy. They were in a more alert position, even though they were lapping water like a dog. And the third thing I see that could be being portrayed here is not only priority, they didn't take unnecessary time doing necessary tasks, and humility, willing to look like a dog for the purpose of being alert, even though it would be a humbling thing to be likened to a dog in that culture especially. But the third thing I think we can see here is availability, and that I do know is a key. These were men that were not afraid, all 10,000 of them. Not just the 300, but all 10,000 were available. The other 1,000, you know, the 22,000 said, I'm not available. I mean, I got drafted into this, but I don't really want to be here. There's fear in my heart, and I just as soon be on my way. Okay. And they weren't available. But these 300, along with the 9,700, they certainly were men of availability, saying, we're here, count us in, we're ready to go. That's a real possibility. An equally possible scenario, as I pointed out a couple of Sundays ago, was that these 300 guys were not necessarily depicting those qualities of humility and alertness and not taking too much time to do a necessary thing. But it could be that these were just the old broken down fat guys that couldn't get down. You know what I mean? I mean, their knees were bad, their backs were out, their bellies were big, or what have you. And it could very well be that these guys were just not able to get down like the younger bucks would, like the younger guys could. I can relate to that. And it could be that God's saying, I want to use the old fat guys. 300 of the guys that you wouldn't pick normally, that you wouldn't draft if you were putting together an army logically, but I want to use what the world would laugh at or the world would ignore or discard. I want to use guys like that. I kind of suspect that that may be it. I really do. You say, yeah, but John, they didn't shy away when they had the opportunity to walk and leave when Gideon said that day, if you have fear, go. And that's the key. They might have been the guys that were broken down and couldn't, you know, go on the ground like the young guys could lay down and drink right from the stream. Maybe they couldn't do that, but the one thing they did have, the greatest ability, is availability. And although they might not have been the most physically fit or the prime time guys, fact of the matter is they were available. They chose to accept the challenge of engaging in the battle. And God said, I like that. They're available. That's the one ability that matters. Not, you know, how young and virile you might be or what have you. But hey, if you're available, I'll use you for my glory. So which one is it, John? I like them both, depending on who I'm talking to. I go both sides of the story. And I think a lot of scriptures have applications in different directions that way. Which was it? I don't know. I think both are applicable. I can see both. And I want to be one that realizes, Lord, you want to use guys like me that feels perhaps broken down or disqualified or not necessarily in the prime in certain arenas or certain ways. Yet you want to use guys like me that you might get the glory. At the same time, I also see, Lord, that there was this other aspect perhaps too, that these were guys that were willing to be humble, lapping water like dogs, and they were not getting sidetracked by spending too much time on the temporal. Can I challenge you with that, men especially? Don't spend too much time on the temporal. You'll regret it eternally. Hey, set your priorities. I know you got to do stuff, me too. But let's not get caught up or absorbed in, because you'll regret it, I promise you. You'll regret it. I'll regret it. We'll get to the Lord's throne that day, the Bema seat, someday not too far away. And it won't matter. So much of the stuff I do will just not matter then. And I'll say, why didn't I set my priorities with eternity's values in view? So these guys did just that. And now he takes those 300, and it came to pass, verse 9. That same night the Lord said to Gideon, arise, get thee down to the host of the Midianites, for I have delivered them into your hand. Now if you fear to go down, go with Purah, your servant, down to the host, the army. And thou, verse 11, shalt hear what they're saying. And afterward shall your hands be strengthened to go down to the battle. So he went with Purah, his servant, unto those guys, the armed men, that were in the army of the Midianites. And the Midianites, verse 12, and the Amalekites, their allies, and all the children of the east lay along the valley like grasshoppers for the multitude. I mean, these guys, looked like grasshoppers. There were so many. And they were bugging the people, quite literally, controlling the land with their vast Midianite and Amalekite armies, you see. They were like the sand by the seashore, verse 12 tells you and me. Now, at this point, Gideon, hey, fear has fastened itself into the heart of Gideon again. There's fear within him. God knows that and doesn't condemn him for it, but realizes, Gideon, you're feeling afraid, aren't you? You see the armies out there in the valley looking like grasshoppers because there's so many. A locust, a plague, like the sand of the seashore. Intimidating. Awesome. I know, Gideon, that you may feel afraid. God didn't condemn him for that, but said, here's what I want you to do about that. Go down to the camp. Take your buddy, take your servant with you, and go down to the camp. And so Gideon did just that. They snuck down to the camp that night, the camp of the Midianites. And when Gideon was come, behold, there was a man, verse 13, that was talking to his buddy. And he said, behold, I dreamed a dream. And lo, a cake of barley bread tumbled into the host of the Midianites, the army of Midian, and came unto a tent and smote it that it fell down and overturned it, that the tent lay on the ground. Verse 14. And the guy that was talking to the guy that was telling this dream said, oh man, this is nothing else but the sword of Gideon, the son of Joash, the man of Israel, for into his hand hath God delivered the Midianites and all the host. Amazing. So Gideon and his buddies sneak down to the camp and they hear two Midianites talking. I had a dream last night. This loaf of barley bread came tumbling down and wiped out the tent. What does it mean? Oh, you got to know, his buddy said. What this means is that guy Gideon. The barley bread represents him. Now, interesting, it doesn't say a massive rock. It says a loaf of barley bread, you know. Now, barley was used to feed the animals, and only the poorest people in Israel ever ate barley. If you were anywhere, had any kind of affluence or success or reputation, you would never eat or serve barley. It was the food of animals and people that were in dire straits or in real poverty. So this is kind of an interesting image. Gideon is likened not to a massive stone or a mighty chariot, but a loaf of barley bread comes tumbling out and knocks down the tent. And oh, the other Midianite said, it's Gideon. Now, what intrigues me is that the men of Midian heard of Gideon. I mean, remember Gideon was hiding away in the wine press that day? He was the least of the least family in his tribe. He was not a well-known guy until recently. Somehow, the message or the news of Gideon began to circulate throughout Midian, throughout the army of the Midianites. And I suggest to you, it probably was because Gideon had dared to take on their God. Their God was Baal.
That is how we too can be known to the enemy, by not fearing false gods, by being faithful to the true and living God. As we continue this story on our next program, we will see the results of this interesting battle that is about to take place. Please join us then.
This teaching is also available on the Searchlight website at johncorson.com. You will also find on the website Pastor John's books and other Bible study resources. Again, the address of the website is johncorson.com. That's johncorson.com.
Most of us desire to spend more time in prayer, just talking with the Lord and hearing from Him. But we often struggle in this area of prayer. In order to help us have a more consistent and effective prayer life, Pastor John has a book called Praying Through the Tabernacle. This book shows us a model of prayer that is based on the Old Testament tabernacle. This is a very practical tool for everyone who desires an intimate walk with the Lord. You may order Praying Through the Tabernacle from the Searchlight website at johncorson.com. searchlight.com.
Searchlight is a listener-supported ministry. We appreciate your prayers and support. May the Lord richly bless you.